Welcome to The American Innovator, a show about you and your ideas. Paid for by FastCap, spreading lean innovations that change the world.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Paul Akers and John Lussier on The American Innovator. We've got Jim on the line. Jim, are you there?
Good morning, guys.
So, Jim, what are we going to talk about this morning? And Jim is from Productivity, Inc. He's a consultant, a lean consultant on the East Coast, and he deals with companies all over the United States, I believe. And he's got some great wisdom and things we can learn from this morning.
And so, in fact, their website has some great tips. They've got hundreds of tips that I read through, and they were very, very informative.
So what do you say, Jim?
What we want to talk about today is to offer up some nuggets to the listeners out there to help them to improve the effectiveness, ultimately, of the lean initiatives that they have underway.
Good. And so specifically, we went over a couple this morning, three little points. Let's hit at those right off the bat.
Sure. Right off the bat is the issue of getting organizations to think about improvement beyond the narrow spectrum of just doing Kaizen events. The second one is being able to put a meaningful deployment and sustainment process in place by a mechanism of being able to teach the improvements to the value adders, the people that have to follow these new processes out there in the workplace. And the third one on the list is the idea of being able to have the supervisors and the value adders collaborate on an ongoing basis and being able to effectively teach bottom-up improvements. So those are the three nuggets we'd like to kick around today.
Okay, so on the first one, on Kaizen events, that's the typical way of deploying improvement on the shop floor. And just for our listeners, real quick, tell them what a Kaizen event is.
A Kaizen event is what we would typically consider a management top-down sponsored type of activity where you would take a lean tool or concept, such as 5S, for example, organize a group of people together, quickly teach them the kind of the core principles, have an application area out there in the workplace in mind, and then go apply the principles that was learned regarding that specific tool or technique, and then be able to come back together and codify it and be able to tell a convincing story about how these particular improvements meaningfully benefit the business.
So an example of that, Jim, would be the extrusion die. So you had a company you were working with that was an aluminum extruder. They had a die that took them maybe 50 minutes to change out, and they applied a Kaizen event to this, and they took that change out of that extruder, of that die in that extruder, from 50 minutes down to a couple minutes. Is that correct? Or kind of give me an idea. Is that a good example of a Kaizen event?
Great example.
Okay. And so what actually happened in that situation? Let's talk about what were the processes real quick. And then that's a Kaizen event, but that's not necessarily the best way to approach continuous improvement. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. What happened in that specific Kaizen event, overwhelmingly better new methodology to perform the changeover was developed, and it was proven, and it was not proven once, it was proven more than once. But fast forward in time 3 weeks, you go back and take a look and see, had changeover lost needle moved in a favorable direction? And the answer turned out to be no. So meeting with the plant manager, Mike, that's when the spark started to fly in this particular instance. And that's when the whole recognition that, we need to redefine, we need to rethink what our definition of a Kaizen event in this company and evolve it to one where it lends itself well to meaningful deployment and meaningful sustainment. And what we had to do is we had to put some new mechanisms in place to see to it that those current best approaches got effectively into the minds and fingertips of the value adders. And as it turned out, the supervisor, the shop floor supervisor, is that key piece to that mechanism to get these improvements to stick.
Okay, so let me get that straight. So in other words, they deployed a Kaizen event to change out this die. They got the benefit from it, but it wasn't really sustainable because after the event was over, everybody kind of went back to doing the same old thing. They weren't reaching into their lean toolbox, so to speak, to solve problems. Am I getting that straight?
Yeah. To be a little bit more precise, the people that were doing this changeover process the way that they've been doing it for the past 20 years, they all obviously couldn't be involved in the Kaizen event. So you know, it was the event, the structure to the event was almost one of, okay, well, what we're doing is we're celebrating the fact that we discovered this new current best approach to do changeover and we proved it, as opposed to we're celebrating the fact that, you know what, not only did we prove it, but now we have this mechanism to get it into the minds and fingertips of the people actually doing it.
So it goes viral, in other words.
Yeah. As it turns out, it exposed this whole issue of the fact that supervisors in this organization need to take on a new role, and that is the role of the teacher of these new current best approaches to actually get out there and coach the people doing the work in these new processes that get demonstrated and proven in these Kaizen events from now on.
Right. So in a nutshell, then, we've got supervisors that say, okay, we're going to go do a Kai, we're going to have a Kaizen event. We're going to take a particular process, whether it be developing or processing building permits or changing aluminum dies out or how we frame a wall, whatever it is that you do out there, you're going to focus on fixing that thing. That's a Kaizen event. And the problem is you do that and then you walk away, you go back to your same work. There's not any sustainability. There's no mechanism in place to create that Kaizen event continuously. It's only whenever you want to have an event or throw a party, if you will. And what the real answer is when the leader of an organization or a supervisor becomes a teacher of the principles to all the workers, then things actually start to gel and happen on a consistent basis. I want to get my head around exactly what you're saying. Is that kind of it?
That's it. Let me give you a classic example of this Good. Factory in Michigan that we're talking about. Chad, who was your kind of your classic doer, he views the value he brings to the organization by being a good doer. He was promoted from an operator to supervisor because he did very well. And now what we're doing in a lean environment, we're starting to change some roles and we're asking him to become a coach and a teacher, which, by the way, he was very nervous about when he first started to hear it. Just from a skill sets perspective.
So right. So, Jim, I'm going to interrupt you. So Chad's a doer. He goes out and gets everything done, but not predisposed to teaching other people how to get things done.
Very true. And the fact of the matter, in this case, with 16 lines that we're looking at that have to adhere to this new changeover procedure,
right?
You know, Chad simply couldn't spread himself that thin and do it. And that was the core reason why this changeover loss performance metric that we were looking at, the needle wasn't moving. So with a little bit of the coaching of the coach, or kind of the teaching of the teacher, so to speak, Chad's doing fine. He's actually learning, I believe, in his heart of hearts to kind of enjoy the role a little. And the good news there is his shift is consistently hitting the 5-minute changeover target now.
And that's one of the great things about Lean is it's about empowering people. And if your processes in your business are based on one person's performance, it's not sustainable. It has to be able to, that you have to have an expert that makes the process the expert. And it sounds like that's what Chad's doing.
Yeah, that's what he's learning.
And so how do you get Chad to learn how to become a teacher? Because, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard the story, Jim, but when I was in Lexus 5 years ago, I had a 3-hour meeting with the vice president of Lexus. There's about 30 of us business people there, and they gave us a lecture. And after the lecture, I asked the guy, what's the most important thing for Toyota? And he said, oh, it's easy. You know, it's not the next hybrid car. It's not the next engineering feat. It's not the next sales plan, the next marketing plan. It's teaching and training people and building a culture of continuous improvement. So Toyota recognizes the importance of teaching and training, that it is fundamental and central to everything they do. As a matter of fact, John and I were just in Lexus 4 weeks ago in Kyushu, Japan, and when we were there, they were training 125 new employees, and they would not go to the shop floor for 1 month. They were in intensive training in their training center for a month before they ever even worked in a Toyota plant because they wanted to make sure they were so well trained in what was going on. So how do you train people, Jim, as a consultant? How do you teach people to be trainers and teachers?
Well, obviously you have to go to Gemba. This all has to be done in the workplace. The type of teacher that we're talking about and coaching is to show the techniques associated with how to get people to unlearn the way things have always been done before. And the first thing that Chad had to do is he had to be enabled personally. he had to learn inside and out and memorize the new work content, sequence, timing, and outcome. Now, for basically a team of six people that were performing this changeover process on this line in order to get it to happen in 5 minutes. So not only did he have to learn a new set of standard work from that perspective, but now the sequencing of how this work happened was also something that he had to personally memorize. And as soon as he proved to us in a kind of a classroom setting that he memorized content, sequence, and timing, then we took him out onto the shop floor and made him one of the six-person team members, and they actually simulated this changeover environment.
Okay, contents, sequence, and timing, I'm a little confused at. And I'm going to think that maybe some of our listeners are going, what's he talking about? Can you elaborate a little more?
Those are the three key components of standard operations. We're talking about a new changeover process that has to happen in 5 minutes as opposed to the previous, 79 minutes on this. So what the key part to it here is that each element of work, Chad needs to understand the content of that work for each of the six people in the changeover team. He needs to know exactly how much time each of those six team members has to perform each element of work, and obviously the sequence and the timing associated with it. So in order for that changeover to happen in 5 minutes, that was what Chad needs to be able to teach the others when the changeover process happens.
So let's talk about content. I want to get my visual. I want to visualize what you're talking about. So what was the kind of content type things that Chad had to know about?
Okay. The content really is associated with the task at hand. The first step in the task would be to retrieve a specific tool that was positioned line side and, unbolt the fasteners that are holding the particular die in place. So that would be the first element of work content. The timing associated with 16 seconds. Then from a sequence perspective, the next element of work for that one of the six people would be to take the particular tool and put it in a very specific location once it's been dismounted, and how much time that takes. So now we're starting to lay out content, sequence, and timing for basically what the classical, what we call in the lean world, the pit crew type of changeover. There's not just one person performing this work. There's a team of six people doing it, and Chad had to teach those six people not only how to do it individually from a content, sequence, and timing perspective, but also how each one of those six team members' work relates to each other to see to it that the overall sequence is maintained.
I like that analogy, Jim, actually, with the pit crew. That's why I say lean is fun. When you think about what a pit crew has to do, that's really a great environment in terms of people working together in a very highly motivated, highly goal-oriented environment. And that's really what you do in a lean environment. How do you become operationally excellent because the way you perform and think about things?
And I think one thing that people don't realize, and especially in racing, is that, the glory always goes to the superstar driver in the car.
Right.
But if it wasn't for the pit crew, they would never win. Races are won or lost in the pit.
And smart drivers always defer to those people who are
exactly
backing them
and
up.
Same with business. It's not about the president. It's
absolutely
not about the leader. It's about the pit crew.
So will you go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say the hardest part for Chad was to see to it that he kept his hands off this process, and he was the one that was kind of the orchestrator and the seeing to it that the people did their work at the right time in the right sequence and followed and performed each element of work properly. That was something that was not an all you had to do for Chad, because his natural tendency, again, that was the reason why he was the supervisor traditionally, was the fact that he could do all this work and he could do it very well. And now he had to stand back and see to it that the others followed this new current best approach.
How do you do that, Jim? What did that look like for Chad to, instead of being in there and grabbing the wheel, so to speak, and throwing it on the car and grabbing the impact wrench, what did it look like in his new role?
Well, there was a couple instances where I had to physically grab him and restrain him. There was another instance where I had to kind of jump in front of him to prevent him from from his instinctive reaction to do, as opposed to provide some constructive feedback to a particular person on the changeover team. For example, hey, you know what? You performed this element of work in the perfect sequence. However, I'm sitting here and taking a look at my stopwatch. It took 10 seconds longer than you should have done. So he basically had a decision to make. He could either jump in to see to it that it was done in 10 seconds, or he could leverage it as a teaching opportunity to give some feedback to the operator. Hey, you know what? You took a little bit longer to do this, and here's the reason why. It was because of the motion that you were using. Let me show you, let me teach you the best way to do it and so that you can do it properly the next time. And it was in a very non-confrontational, very collaborative way. And that's really the key thing that we're looking for here is kind of a new definition of collaboration between supervisors and the value adders or operators.
So let's do a little bit of a recap, because I think you're making an excellent point here. Traditionally, what we see with consultants, and we see really, frankly, John and I see this all the time wherever we go, we see the Kaizen event deployed as a methodology to gain improvement within an organization. And what that means, again, is, you know, you focus on one thing and everybody runs in there and they fix it and then they go back to their normal work. And the problem with that is, the next step is it's not very sustainable, because what we want in an organization is we want the flow of continuous improvement. We don't want the ups and downs and the variations. We want a nice, consistent flow of continuous improvement within an organization. And the Kaizen events don't particularly lend themselves to that. And then the next issue is, why? Because instead of making and helping create teachers and trainers within organizations, we get them in there changing the tire, if you will, when what they need to be doing is analyzing, standing back, looking, providing constructive criticism or constructive feedback, if you will, to the people doing the work so they can learn what improvement looks like. What did I miss, Jim?
Spot on. There's a great analogy to this that we like to tell the supervisors when we're teaching them how to be teachers, and the analogy is we used the Blue Angels and Navy Flight Demonstration Squadron. The Blue Angels, the way that works is as soon as they fly their show and they get done kissing all the babies and signing all the autographs, they go back into a shed and they review a set of videos during each show. Each aircraft has a camcorder on it. And what the role and responsibility is of each of the team members is during this playback of the video is to point out where errors were made in the air show demonstration, because it's remarkable to learn that the Blue Angels have never flown the perfect air show.
Yes.
So what they have to do is they leverage that as a teaching opportunity, and they promise the team members that, you know what, next time I'm not going to make that turn, you know, a half a second late. I'm going to hit it spot on. And again, one of the things we're leveraging in this changeover process is to help with the teaching and coaching process. These changeovers get videotaped. They get played back, and what we're looking to confirm is content, sequence, and timing, and use it as an additional level of teaching that can happen to help really nail these processes exactly the way they were designed.
Right. So now what I'm hearing is you've created a learning organization, an organization that is predisposed to continually learning and reflecting, the Japanese word being hansei. So these Blue Angels go in, they learn from their mistakes, they constantly are reflecting back on it, and as a result, they create, again, operational excellence. They're constantly upping their game. And like you said, they're not perfect. They've never flown the perfect air show, but they are continually getting better.
Yes.
It's powerful. It's great stuff. I love it. John, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I'd say the biggest thing, it always was the top down. So whether it's the consultant or the owner of the business, so long as you're thinking that this is just some major event you can do and get it over with and get on with your business or your life, that's the wrong methodology.
It's a journey.
Right. So you got to
make
lean
fun music.
Just little tiny improvements, and everybody needs to be doing it every single day so it becomes a part of themselves, then you're going to succeed.
Wow. So, Jim, how do people get a hold of you if they want to work with your organization, Productivity Inc.?
Just go to our website, www.productivityinc.com, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that the audience out there might have.
Right on. And, you know, I can't recommend that enough, because anytime you have a consultant that realizes how important it is to empower the people they're teaching and teach them how to be teachers. So basically eliminate themselves out of the equation. That's the kind of
consultant
you want.
Especially when you have an expert with a fresh set of eyes, and especially someone like Jim who gets it, that normally most consultants are the problem. And he realizes that it's not about feeding a man for a day, but teaching him how to fish. So,
awesome. Well, great job, Jim. We really loved having you on, and we'll have you back again.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, you've been listening to The American Innovator, and we'll see you next week on KGMI.